Welcome to installment 100 of Sefer Mitzvahs from the Rambam. Today's portion contains four commandments relating to the laws of kosher food. Prohibition 193, the prohibition against eating kilai hakerem, a mixture of foods planted in a vineyard. Prohibition 153, not to eat tevel, or food which has not had the proper portions, such as truma and maisre, removed from it. Prohibition 194, not to drink wine which has been used for idolatrous offerings. And positive commandment 146, relating to shechita or kosher slaughtering. Prohibition 193 is the prohibition against kilai hakerem. Kilayim refers to a forbidden mixture, and kerem means when this is in a vineyard. Specifically, this is referring to when someone plants grape seeds together with another type of food, such as a grain or a vegetable, in the same area. Although it might seem to infer to a grafting of two different species, it is rather referring to the individual species being planted in proximity to one another. Prohibition number 193 is a prohibition not to eat any food which has grown in such a forbidden mixture. The expression used in the Chumash is pen tikdash, that one should not plant these in proximity to one another, lest they become forbidden. And the word pen, says the Rambam, or lest, is always used in conjunction with a prohibition of the Torah, as he explained previously in his eighth of the introductory principles. We therefore see that this is a biblical prohibition. It is only by biblical decree, however, in the land of Israel, as opposed to outside of Israel. The Rambam tells us from this expression, pen tikdash, we'll learn another detail regarding this prohibition. The Talmud tells us that the word tikdash could be broken up into the word tukad eish, which would mean lest you make a fire out of it. This comes to teach you that not only one is prohibited from eating it, but even from getting any benefit from it, even using it as fuel for a fire. The Talmud in Psachim, in the second chapter, quotes the Rambam, points out that the fact that the word eating or not to eat the forbidden mixture, since this is not used in the Torah, Abaya learns out that even not in the normal way of using this food, even so it is prohibited, as we mentioned yesterday, by milk and meat. Since the word eating is not used in conjunction with the prohibition, any form of benefit is prohibited. The commentaries point out that since species were created with individual characteristics, and God clearly had a definite plan in the creation of all these species, He intended for them to remain separate. And therefore, a person that mixes them together is in fact thwarting the plan of creation by eliminating the individual sorts of fields, the idea of a kerem, a vineyard, and another field of grain. By mixing them together, he is mixing up the entire source of creation and the order of creation, and therefore the Torah forbids it. Prohibition number 194 is the prohibition against yayin nesech, or wine which was used for an idolatrous offering. This prohibition derives from the end of the Chumash in Parshas Hazinu. And although it does not explicitly say that one is forbidden from drinking the wine, nevertheless, the verse refers to the fat of the sacrifices, referring to those of the idols, and the wine of their libations. We therefore see, says the Rambam, that just as animals which were sacrificed to an idol, one is forbidden from eating, so too the wine which was poured for the sacrifices, one is forbidden from eating by biblical decree. And the Rambam tells us that one would incur lashes for drinking such wine, and the severity of this prohibition is so severe that one is prohibited even from having benefit from the wine, not only from drinking it. The Rambam brings two proofs to show that this counts as one of the 613 commandments, as this is a controversial ruling, as the Ramban vehemently disagrees and says that this should not count as one of the biblical commandments. The Rambam has two proofs, one from the tractate Aveda Zorah of the Talmud. The Talmud there discusses what happens if a forbidden food falls into another type of food. When is it prohibited? How much is necessary in the mixture? Is it only if the taste is detectable, or even in a smaller amount? After the considerable discussion there in the Talmud, it says that Rabbi Yechon and Reish Lakish both agree that all kol isurin shebateira, all biblical prohibitions, are prohibited only if one can detect their taste. with the exception of Tevel, which is Prohibition 153 from today's portion, and Yayin Nesech, idolatrous wine, which have other laws. But regardless of what is mentioned there as far as the law, the Rambam learns that Kol Isurin Shebetera means all biblical prohibitions have this law, except for those of Tevel and Yayin Nesech. What do we see from this? That idolatrous wine is included in the category of all biblical prohibitions. And this is a proof it counts as one of the 613. Another proof that Rambam brings is from the Sifri, which discusses when the Jewish people sinned at Shittim by having adulterous affairs with the daughters of Moav, the non-Jewish women. And the Sifri explains how the daughters enticed the men, and they said, the daughters said, drink some of this wine, and it was wine which was used for idolatrous purposes. And the Sifri says that the Torah had not yet prohibited non-Jewish wine. We see from this statement, says the Rambam, that only now, at that point, did the Torah not prohibit the non-Jewish wine. Later, therefore, the Torah must have prohibited such wine. Therefore, we see again it is a biblical, not only a rabbinic prohibition. Those places, says the Rambam, where it mentions that there were rabbinic decrees, that there were 18 things, for the Talmud says, that the rabbis decreed as being prohibited, or other phrases where the Talmud says that our rabbis were strict, implying, therefore, that this is only a rabbinic commandment. The Rambam says that this is not referring to Yayin Nesach, or wine which has actually been used for idolatrous purposes. There is another category of Stam Yayin, which means wine which was made or brought in contact with a non-Jew, and we are forbidden by rabbinic decree from drinking such wine as well. The Talmud, in fact, discusses three categories of wine. Yayin Nesach, which was actually used for idolatrous purposes, Yayin Stam, which was in contact with a non-Jew, and wine which was left in the trust of a non-Jew. In any case, the Rambam says that the cases where it is referred to as rabbinic decree are speaking of Stam Yayin, wine which was not necessarily used for idolatrous offerings, which is nevertheless forbidden, which is incidentally most grape juice and wine, which we find today on the market. These are the reasons why they're not kosher, because of this decree of Yayin Stam. In any case, the Rambam concludes by saying that this is a biblical prohibition, and the details of which are explained in the last few chapters of the Talmudic Tractate of Eda Zara. Prohibition 153 is the prohibition of Tevel. The law is that various foods grown in the land of Israel must have certain portions separated from them. First, one must take truma from the food, approximately 2%, and give it to the Kohen. After this, another 10% of the remainder must be taken as maaser and given to the Levi. Then the Levi must take a tenth of his 10% of the amount which he has received and give that to the Kohen as well. This is called trumas maaser. In addition, the original owner of the field must take a second maaser, either maaser oni, to be given to poor people, or maaser sheni, to be taken himself to Jerusalem to eat. In any case, before these different products have been separated, the food may not be eaten, and it is known as tevel. There are two general types of tevel, the Rambam tells us, and the punishment which one incurs for eating this type depends on which it is. And we have two different verses for each different type of prohibition. One verse states, "V'lo yichalu es kodshei bnei Yisrael asher yorimu l'Hashem," that you should not profane the holy offerings of the Jewish people that they raise up to God. This is referring, says the Rambam, to truma, which is given to the Kohen, and the truma's maaser, which the Levi gives to the Kohen. The Talmudic Tractate Sanhedrin tells us that this word chilul is used also by the prohibition not to eat the truma after it has been separated. And the punishment there is a heavenly death penalty. Therefore we learn that if one eats this truma, even when it is mixed up in the other food, one also incurs this heavenly death penalty for eating the tevel, the prohibited mixture. This is one category. Another category, as the Talmud explains in Makkos, that not only for Truma and Truma's Maiser, but also everything else, for Maiser, or Maiser Sheini, or Maiser Oni, they are also prohibited. And this we learn from another verse, which states that you are not allowed to eat any of these offerings within your gates. And there the Talmud compares this statement, this general statement, with another statement later on in the book of Deuteronomy, which clearly indicates all of the different types of offerings which one is prohibited from eating, including even Maaser Oni, the tithe which is given to poor people. We therefore learn that since the same expression is used in both, that one would incur lashes for eating any of these gifts when they are still mixed up with the original produce. Therefore, if it is truma or trumas maisir, one would incur a heavenly death penalty. Should it be anything else, one would incur lashes. The details of this commandment are discussed many places in the tractates de Mai, Trumais, and Maisris. This is evidently a very relevant mitzvah today for fruit and produce which is grown in the land of Israel, which again must have these portions separated from it, although they are not given to the Kohen and Levi, nevertheless they must be separated before the food may be eaten. The final commandment of today's portion is positive commandment 146 of Shechita or kosher slaughtering. In the book of Deuteronomy, chapter 12, verse 21, God commands the Jewish people, telling them that they can eat their cattle and small animals after they have been slaughtered, kasher tzivisicha, as I have commanded you. When we look in the Chumash, we do not see any place where there was ever such a command. And we have from the oral tradition passed down that this is referring to the oral laws of Shechita, which were passed down through Moshe Rabbeinu to all the ages thereafter. And these are the laws of kosher slaughtering, such as the cutting of the two simonim, or signs as they are called, the kana, the windpipe, and the veshet, the food pipe. Should it be a bird, a chicken, for example, one must cut only one of the two, and in fact only the majority of one of those two. Should it be a larger animal, such as a goat or a cow, one must cut both of these two signs, or the majority of both of them, before the animal is allowed to be eaten. The Sifri points out that this applies equally to sacrifices, which certainly must be slaughtered, as well as to chulin, regular food, which is eaten in a secular context. The details of all of these laws are explained in the tractate Chulin, and included within are the five general categories of the laws of Shechita, which every ritual slaughter must be familiar with. We cannot go into detail about them, but one of the four is Akira, which has many different meanings, one of which is that the knife which is used for the slaughtering process must be absolutely smooth and absolutely sharp. And one of the functions or results of this is that the animal feels no pain, as we would see in a paper cut, for example, since the paper is so thin, at the moment when the cut takes place, one does not feel anything. And so, too, by the time the animal would feel any pain at all, this would be after all the blood has already left its head and it has lost its consciousness completely. The Medrash points out that all these laws of kosher slaughtering, with all of their complexity, really essentially do not change the nature of the animal. After all, as the Medrash, does God really care if it is slaughtered a little bit here or a little bit there? Does this have an intrinsic meaning to God? After he has chosen that these are the mitzvahs, then yes, it does have meaning, since he has chosen that this is the way it must be done. And it has the further result of elevating and sanctifying our eating to make it a holy act instead of just a profane, everyday physical act. The Kli Yakar points out an interesting facet, or a result of all of these various laws of kosher meat, that since a person should not have an uncontrollable desire for meat, putting all of these details in the way before a person could eat meat will have the result of minimizing his desire for it. He will be unable to readily obtain it, and he will therefore be able to control his desire for meat. The Talmud declares that originally men were not allowed to eat meat until the days after the flood. However, afterwards we are allowed to eat meat. It is explained in the Chassidic philosophy that there is even something positive about eating meat. That the entire universe, as the Rambam explains in his Hilchos Yesodot Torah, is in a state of flux. That the mineral kingdom is being consumed by the plant kingdom and therefore being elevated. So too the plants are eaten by animals and elevated to the status of animal. When a person eats an animal, the animal is not remaining in its present state, it is being elevated, becoming part of the human kingdom. As the story is told of the Alter Rebbe, that he was once brought a question regarding a chicken which had a questionable kashrus value.